chug, 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 chug,
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Wizard Staff Podcast. I am your host, Blake.
And I'm Guy.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We do drink and swear, so you have been warned. Please drink responsibly when playing children's card games. Tonight, we are talking about a recent card that came out in Commander Legends, and we're going to be doing a deep dive on this new card, and at the end of it, a deck tech for Gen Arcanum Weaver. But before that, we gotta talk about a few things. Guy, what are we drinking?
Well, I'm drinking Three Floyds Barbarian Haze IPA. It was $2 on the way out of the liquor store. So I was
$2?
Like, yeah, I just picked it up and was like, yeah, I guess this is what I meant by being experimental with the new alcohols I've wanted to try. So it is very hazy, but I will get used to it. What are you drinking, Blake?
Well, I kind of cheated. I went back to a wine. I am drinking a 2015 Merlot from Waterbrook Reserve. It's been a while since I've had a Merlot. It's better than I remember them. I like it.
I mean, that sounds pretty fancy. Sounds very sophisticated. I'm glad that I can use the big words now instead. I'm totally still recovering from that hangover from our 7-8 hour marathon of just recording Commander Legends.
It was only like 5.
I mean, it was 5 on paper, but behind the scenes.
Oh yeah, I guess it was more than 5. Yeah, that was a fun time. Better than the core set, right?
I guess, in a way, it was.
All right. Guy, we got some big news. Do you want to tell the listeners about it?
Yes, yes, yes. You've probably heard it so many times before, but I'm not going to say it again, because today I can finally say we have a winner for the Rhystic Study giveaway. We recently reached 200 subscribers, and I'm very thankful for that. And just to note, but we will be doing another one of these for 300. I'll announce whatever card and giveaway that is in the near future. But the winner for our Rhystic Study giveaway is Caleb Overlander. Caleb, thank you very much for subscribing. And thank you very much for listening. You rock.
You rock. God damn, we're just parroting Command Zone now.
Who?
Yeah, thank you, Caleb. And really, honestly, everyone that listens, it does mean a whole bunch to us. Everyone who comes back and listens every week, we appreciate it. We love you guys.
Don't unsubscribe now just because you're done with that. Because
we
like
just
I said,
down to like 100.
Just like I said, once we hit 300, we're going to have a similar giveaway. We did Force of Will, and now we're doing, and then we just finished Rhystic Study, so we'll have another pretty good altar card here to give away soon. But another big thing is that Geo, our friend who came on for episode 71, where we did tips for new players, has started his own podcast called Mindful Magic. You've probably seen me retweet a bunch of his stuff and, you know, trying to support him, but go give him a listen. You can find him on all the same big podcast outlets that you can find us, like Spotify, iTunes. Yeah, I'm very proud of Geo for, you know, being able to turn his passion into another podcast. And yeah, I mean, it's great. I hope he keeps it up. And maybe one day we'll have Geo back on for a official MTG crossover episode.
Give it like 5 months, Geo's going to have like 1,000 subscribers and we're going to be like, can we be on your podcast? And he's going to be like, no.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
All right, so should we get into this episode today?
Well, Blake, you wrote most of this. I think I wrote maybe 3 lines. Yeah. I just want to say that we have talked in the past where we were like, we're not going to do deck techs, but we're not trying to, like, you know, say that we're not going to do that anymore. But we are trying to take a commander from more recent sets after we do our review and just kind of do like an experimental deck tech. I think Blake does plan to buy this one in paper.
Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah, so it won't be like our complete norm, but yeah. Alright, Blake, take it away.
Okay, so Gen is a new commander from Commander Legends set, and is currently the fourth most popular commander from this set, according to EDHREC.com. He's an enchantment-style Mardu deck, and enchantment decks are usually seen in Selesnya or Bant or 4-5 color enchantment good stuff. So seeing this Mardu enchantment deck really allows for a whole new type of deck to exist, and it got me pretty excited because for any long-time listeners know, I fucking love enchantments so much. So this really got my brain twirling and just had me thinking a whole bunch, but I should read Gen first, so we're all on the same page. Gen Arcanum Weaver is red, white, black. He's a legendary creature human wizard, that's a 2/3, and he has an activated ability of Mardu, tap, sacrifice an enchantment, return target enchantment card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So Gen allows you to basically reanimate your enchantments. This is a valuable effect given how difficult it is, like in almost any color, to return enchantments from the grave. And I just want to quickly clarify a rules question, because I've seen it pop up in Reddit and Facebook and a bunch of other social media sites. You cannot sacrifice an enchantment and then get back that same enchantment with Gen's ability. So you can't just like sacrifice a Necropotence and then get back that Necropotence.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people ask that same question, and I can see why people think that's the case. And I'm glad that Blake is putting his foot down and saying, no, you can't. Your dreams are dead.
Oh, well, I'm not killing dreams, just the rules of magic.
We can edit out the not part and, you know, you'll just saying,
not
I'm
my
killing
fault.
Dreams.
No.
Edit it to
Don't
say,
take me
it
out
is
of context.
My fault.
No.
That is all I ever do.
No. I'm in control of editing, damn it. Alright, so
that's what you think.
So in Commander, you can kind of build your deck whoever you want it to be, as long as it follows the rules of the game, right?
Really?
Yeah, crazy. It's almost like the Commander format has a bunch of creativity embedded into it. So most Gen decks are going to be using Curses, Sagas, Good Stuff, Stacks, Combo, or a combination of the prior. And I just kind of wanted to go through each of these deck building styles, and at the end of this episode, talk about the deck list that I made and why I built it, and explain how it works. So I figured, let's just start with curses. So all curses enchant players and provide a detrimental effect to that player. Currently, there are only 29 curses, 22 of which are in Mardu. And why would players build Gen with curses? Why would people do that? Well, because Gen allows you to basically sacrifice enchantments that you control, and you control the curses that you put on other players. It's a little bit confusing, but you do control those curses that are going on the other players. One of the big downsides to curses is the fact that you put it on somebody, and then maybe a turn or two later, you really wish it was on that other opponent instead, and now you can't really do anything about it, and the game's starting to go in a direction that you don't like, and you're just like, ah, damn it. But Gen kind of gets around this downside of curses. It allows you to sacrifice that curse and then switch it with another curse that's in your graveyard onto another opponent, and it kind of keeps you in control of the flow of your game plan with curses specifically. So curses can either have a static effect, or they could have like a triggered effect on your opponent's upkeep, or a trigger whenever your opponent attacks. There's various examples of this, like Curse of Bloodletting is a static effect, Curse of Fool's Wisdom is static, Curse of Opulence has that opponent's attacking trigger, and then there's also like Overwhelming Splendor, which is a static effect that basically is a one-sided humility. Some curses do have pretty weak effects, if I'm being honest, but like I said, some of them have very powerful effects, like Overwhelming Splendor. I really love playing Overwhelming Splendor on somebody. I know some people might think it's mean, but at least in the playgroups I play with, it's very justified. And it's noteworthy that if Overwhelming Splendor is in your graveyard, you can use Gen to switch it and essentially cheat that huge high casting cost, which is like awesome. Whenever you cheat high casting costs in Magic, that's usually pretty good. So it's likely we're going to see more curses printed over the coming years. A cycle of curses gets printed every few years since the original Innistrad block, and we're likely to see more specifically coming up in 2021 with Innistrad, Werewolves, and Vampires.
Yeah, and I think another good place that we tend to see those curses is in the Commander decks as well. I think that's a good place where WotC slides those in, because they often are political tools to try and enchant another player and get your opponents to be like, okay, I need you to attack this person because it's going to create treasure tokens for us. Or if you attack this person, it's going to really like get them to be milling cards or whatever. So that's another place that I think that we'll be seeing those.
Yep, and whenever those curses come out, it's likely to spark interest again in Gen as a commander.
So he'll always be relevant.
Yeah, or at least I think the interest of Gen will somewhat be maintained over the years. I know it's always kind of been about like the latest and greatest commander, and that's maybe a topic for another day. But I do think, given that all these curses that will be coming out in the coming years, that there's probably going to be some interest maintained over the years. So, next up, we're going to talk about sagas, because people build Gen with sagas. But what is a saga? It's an enchantment type that was introduced first in Dominaria, and each saga tells the story of a key event from the plane's past as it unfolds during each of your turns. This is done by placing war counters on the saga as it ETBs and after your draw step. And it's usually a different effect each time. It's not like the same one every single time. And you do this until you are forced to sacrifice it. So Gen allows you to sacrifice a saga before it gets to an effect you don't want, or he can reanimate a saga as soon as it sacrifices itself, so you're just like, oh, I lost my saga, I'll get it right back with Gen. You can also activate Gen at the end of your upkeep to reanimate the saga. The saga will enter the battlefield with a counter and immediately get another counter after your draw step. And this means you basically have skipped the first effect in a way, and you kind of just get straight to the good stuff if you really like the second lore counter ability and not the first one. So you can kind of do some cute things based on you really want to watch on the timing of when you activate Gen, so you can do those cool, tricky things. There are currently 24 sagas in total. Only 15 of those are in Mardu. If I'm being honest, not a lot of them have super powerful effects, but there are ones that are halfway decent, such as Elspeth Conquers Death and Eldest Reborn. Those two I like. So in the future, we're only going to get more and more. Like we've already seen since Dominaria, we also got more in Theros Beyond Death, and we're likely to get more in the future. I haven't ever heard anyone from R&D say, sagas were a design mistake, we're never going to make them again. It's kind of unconfirmed, but it's pretty much a given that, alright, this worked out, people seem to like them, we're going to print more of these.
It's definitely not one of those evergreen things, but it's something that definitely can be very important to use in terms of like storytelling with sets.
Yeah, they're great for the lore, for the Morthos.
Right. So where we had Theros and it was telling stories of heroes and gods, or Dominaria, which is, you know, the plane that we've visited the most and has the most lore behind it, sagas were great for that. And sagas can be used for probably other planes that have such a deep history like those.
Yep.
There's rumors that they might come out in Kaldheim, but we'll see.
We'll just have to find out. So this next deck style for Gen is a category that I am calling good stuff. What do I mean by good stuff? Well, there are generic commander staples that you can run in Mardu color identity, such as Swords to Plowshares, Path to Exile, Enlightened Tutor, Demonic Tutor, Toxic Deluge, Gamble, Smothering Tithe, Chaos Warp, Deflecting SWAT, Wheel of Fortune, etc., etc. I could go on all day, probably. Of course, you may not want to put these cards in your deck because you either don't have the budget for them, as some of them are quite expensive. Wheel of Fortune. And you might also not want to put these cards in your deck simply because you don't want to. You don't want to play with staples. You have complete power as the deck builder, and you just don't want to do it. It's your choice. Also, in this good stuff section, there are what I would like to call breakable enchantments. So these are the enchantments that you have a beneficial effect that is later balanced by a delayed detrimental effect. The clearest example would probably be Demonic Lore. So Demonic Lore costs 2 and a black. It's an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you draw 3 cards, and at the beginning of your end step, you lose 2 life for each card in your hand. So it has an immediately beneficial effect, and then in order to balance it out, it has a delayed effect of causing you life loss at the end of your turn.
This honestly feels like a signature card for Gen, just because I don't know any other deck where it could nearly be as good as it is with Gen. Because you would play this, and then obviously you're going to sack this so Gen can reanimate a different enchantment, and then maybe you get this back at a later time so you can draw 3 more cards. So yeah,
I would totally agree with that, and I think it's just the most straightforward example of how Gen can make the most use out of this, because you pay 3 mana at sorcery speed, draw 3 cards, use Gen to sacrifice it so you don't take any damage. That's a good example of it. Another example would be Demonic Pact. It is 2 black-black, an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, choose one that hasn't been chosen. Demonic Pact deals 4 damage to target creature or player, and you gain 4 life. Target opponent discards 2 cards, draw 2 cards, and you lose the game.
This card sucks, Blake. What are you talking about?
Yeah, because it sucks, because basically on the 4th turn you're going to lose the game, right? Wrong. You can just sacrifice this right before the upkeep of your 4th turn, before you have to put the you lose the game trigger on the stack, and you get all those other awesome benefits.
Or you pull a total plot twist and just choose you lose the game as the first one.
No. We're not doing that.
Yes.
Don't be a troll. Okay. I do want to say, if you are going to fill up your deck with these breakable enchantments, as I'm calling them, I would recommend adding to your deck cards that can sacrifice enchantments, especially cards that can sacrifice enchantments for free. So these would be cards kind of like Orotog, Faith Healer, and the next best option would be Claw of Gix. And the reason I suggest this is because you don't want to have out a Demonic Pact and have your Gen destroyed while he's tapped, and then you're like, oh no, now I can't sacrifice my Demonic Pact, it goes to your upkeep, you have to choose, you lose the game, and then your opponents are just like, haha, easy to kill him, I hardly had to do anything. Like, you don't want that sort of stuff to happen. Like, you very much don't want to get caught with your, like, pants down. So you don't want to be, like, completely 100% reliant on your commander to be sacrificing these breakable enchantments. So that's just kind of, like, my word of advice to anyone building this deck style. Now, the last part to this good stuff section is general enchantment theme synergy. I see a lot of people just running general enchantment synergy. You could try winning by casting enchantments, create tokens, and beat down your opponents with cards like Archon of Sun's Grace, Sigil of the Throne, Ajani's Chosen, Luminarch Ascension. Cards that make all these tokens, and you just kind of beat your opponents' faces in. You could also just do generic card advantage stuff with Mesa Enchantress, Stolen Strategy, or Sunbrazen Invocation. I do actually want to take a quick side note, though, because, like I said, I love enchantments. And being in the Mardu color identity means you miss out on most of the Enchantress draw engine, that most enchantment decks run. You only get access to Mesa Enchantress, the mono white one, and you miss out on running Eidolon of Blossoms, Setessan Champion, Satyr Enchanter, Verdurin Enchantress, Argothian Enchantress, Enchantress Presence, cards that say that basically say when you cast an enchantment, draw a card. And so it's really nice when you can have like all of those, because you're just like, play an enchantment, draw a card, play an enchantment, draw a card, just go through your deck really fast. But unfortunately, with, again, given its color identity, you can't really do that.
Yeah, I really hope that Maro hears this one day and he's really just thinking, man, I should have made that Setessan Champion white, like Blake said.
Oh, he admitted it in that one episode of Drive to Work. I called it. I called it in our set review. I knew it.
You can tell that Blake doesn't hold a grudge at all.
I'm just like, I knew it, that card. Okay, the one, like, one of the few instances where, like, it should have been a white card was actually valid. Okay, mm-hmm. Not gonna get salty. I'm gonna move on. Okay.
Sorry, the one thing that I would like to say, because I do notice that you have access to, like, red and black, which does have a lot of discard and draw, which doesn't that kind of, like, help balance out the fact that you can't have the Enchantress engine, because you can draw cards, discard the cards that are probably like higher costed that you'll want to reanimate later with Gen?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. You do begin to rely more heavily in Red's looting effects.
Like Faithless Looting?
Yeah, and more of Black's card draw, whether you want to do like Phyrexian Arena, or if you want to do Necropotence, or just any... Black has a lot of ways of drawing cards, just if you look into the history of the color. So you kind of rely more on those colors to get your card draw. That's totally true. You're not screwed for not being able to access the Enchantress engine. You do have ways to draw cards. Alright, so there's also generic ramp, like Starfield Mystic or Land Tax. There's also generic removal, like Darksteel Mutation, Oblivion Ring, Doomwake Giant, or Oubliette with new art. There's a bunch of different options. It's not just these cards that I've mentioned, but basically you're trying to do generic enchantment value synergy stuff in Mardu. And like I kind of said before, Gen can cheat out the splashy high CMC enchantments from the grave, such as Stolen Strategy, Sunbird's Invocation, Overwhelming Splendor, Captive Audience, etc., etc. That's one of the potential, like, quote-unquote game finishers in some of these kinds of decks. But there's even more ways to build Gen, and we're kind of nearing the end here. Those are the stacks and combo builds. This is the approach that I took with Gen, but to be honest, many players are not interested in building him this way. Like, I'd say like maybe like 10% of Gen decks are kind of built this way.
What Blake's really trying to say is that he's the hipster of the Gen deck builders. He's not like those other guys.
Oh my god. God, just kill
me. He's cool.
No. So, a lot of people just don't like stacks, and that's fine. Some people do, some people don't. It kind of just is up to you as a person to communicate that with fellow players, and hopefully have the similar interest to play against stacks or not. Nevertheless, I still want to talk about it. So, stacks cards try to kind of disrupt your opponents and slow down the game, then you try to design your deck to break parity and get around your own stacks effects in order to gain advantage and win. I want to say that again, like, please remember to actually have a way to win through your stacks pieces. Don't just, like, jam out stacks cards and, like, make the game go on for, like, 3 hours, because most of your opponents will, like, justifiably be kind of pissed. Like, you just did this and you can't even get around it. You can't even win the game now. Come on, man. Yeah, so I think that's why a lot of people get pissed. Justifiably so. Anyway, the following cards kind of count as stacks pieces in my mind. And some of these are in my deck, some of them aren't. I'm just going to read them aloud, and if you're listening on YouTube, these will be on the screen. Spirit of the Labyrinth, Painful Quandary, Cabal, Console of Allocation, Stranglehold, Rule of Law, Deafening Silence, Archon of Emeria, Eidolon of Rhetoric, Blood Moon, Mags of the Moon, Thalia, Garden of Raven, Aven Mind Censor, Dramp Magistrate, Aura of Silence. All cards that really slow down the game, try and cut off resources to your opponents or your every single player. So the other part of this category is the combo. So you can build Gen kind of as a combo deck. There are many combos within the Mardu color identity. And the real question is, like, how many cards does the combo require? And how useful are those combo pieces independent from the combo? Like, two card combos are generally considered to be like the most strong, the strongest. And combo pieces that are useful on their own are considered to be pretty great. So one combo you could do that I've seen a lot of decks have is Exquisite Blood plus Sanguine Bond. So you just got to make sure both of them are in play when an opponent loses life, and then Exquisite Blood triggers, which then causes Sanguine Bond to trigger, which causes the other one to trigger, and it just goes back and forth forever until all of your opponents are dead by losing their life. And honestly, I just gotta say this. Like, you can do that. It's totally up to you. But in my experience, talking with new players over the years, people typically play this combo, and then after winning with it, like, two or three times, they take it out because they get bored. Like, it's not even that efficient of a two-card combo, if I'm being honest. One of them is kind of good. The other one, on their own, kind of sucks ass. And so, I feel like this is kind of, like, just the kind of deck people are going to build like once or twice and then take apart. Okay, so another combo that you are likely to see within Gen is Opalescence plus Parallax Wave plus Grim Guardian or Forgeborn Oreads. So Opalescence makes your Parallax Wave a creature that can flicker itself infinitely. And then once you are flickering the Parallax Wave infinitely, just put out a Grim Guardian or a Stoneforge Oreads to convert that infinite flickering into a win con by draining all life or dealing infinite damage to your opponents. And there are many, many combos that you can play with. So, now that I've kind of explained the general idea between all the various ways you can build Gen, I would now like to move into the deck tech part of this episode and just kind of talk to you guys about how I chose to build Gen. So, I built a stacks combo list, and the goal is to assemble some sort of two or three card combo and play stacks pieces if necessary. The combos are centered around creatures and enchantments, and again, I just kind of want to give a disclaimer that this deck is about, like, I think last time I checked it was like $3,000. So, and it's not even like fold out or anything, it's just like baseline $3,000. And most players are not interested in spending that kind of money for a deck that's like not even like competitive EDH. This deck is not even CEDH worthy. And that's okay. I think I own like half these cards, so maybe in another year I'll like have this deck fully on paper. I just wanted to make that disclaimer. Okay, so now I'd like to talk about the combos. We got Heliod Suncrowned plus Walking Ballista, and this combo essentially allows you to do infinite damage to all of your opponents. I'm not going to get into the details of each of these combos. You can very easily look them up online. I don't have a lot of time with this episode. Then we have Kiki Jiki plus Coercive Recruiter or Zealous Conscripts or Splinter Twin, another two-card combo, actually multiple two-card combos. There's a lot of cards that over the years that combo with Kiki Jiki and allows you to attack for infinite damage. There's also World Gorger Dragon plus Animate Dead or Dance of the Dead or Necromancy plus Impact Tremors or Perforos God of the Forge.
Yeah.
Basically what you do is use a reanimate spell to get back World Gorger Dragon, then essentially flicker World Gorger Dragon infinitely while having out a card like Impact Tremors or Perforos God of the Forge to deal infinite damage to all of your opponents. And on a very similar vein, almost identical, instead of World Gorger Dragon, you use Leonin Relic Warden. and you do the exact same thing, basically. And if you do want to look up how this combo exists and works, the Spike Feeders a few days ago put out a video explaining the combo. I will probably link that in the description below. One thing to note about World Gorger Dragon combo loops is that our commander does not synergize in a way that allows us to win. You know, World Gorger Dragon loops are in commanders such as Anji Falconwrath or Krokza, which those commanders being in the command zone are basically another combo piece once you get the loop going, and they basically let you win. Unfortunately, Gen doesn't do that, but we have enough cards to make this three-card combo work. Three-card combos can still be powerful. So the next section of this deck is the tutors, and we're obviously running some of the strongest tutors: Demonic Tutor, Vampiric Tutor, Diabolic Intent, Imperial Seal, Gamble, Enlightened Tutor, Buried Alive. Then we also got more specific tutors such as Imperial Recruiter and Recruiter of the Guard. These can get stacks pieces, they can get protection pieces, they can get combo pieces. They are quite flexible given the cards we have in this deck. Now we move on to the stack section, and I'm choosing to run Archon of Emyria, Rule of Law, Deafening Silence, Eidolon of Rhetoric, Aura of Silence, Blood Moon, not Magus of the Moon because it's a creature and not an enchantment. I'm running Possibility Storm, and also Draenith Magistrate because the two of those create a soft lock, which essentially prevents your opponents from casting any spells besides their commander. I'm also running cards like Opposition Agent, Stranglehold, Sire of Insanity, and Smothering Tithe, just because they're generically powerful cards. One thing I do want to note about this is that most of our interaction is in the form of disruption pieces. We don't have a lot of stack-based interaction. We really try to use these disruption stack pieces as our form of interaction. So if someone's got like a Counterspell War is just super instant heavy or just using activated abilities all the time, we might have a little bit of a hard time dealing with them. So in terms of card advantage, like I said earlier, we were missing out on the Enchantress Draw Engine since we are in Mardu. And this deck tries to go fast enough to where we really don't care that our hand size begins to get low after a few turns. An important thing to keep in mind is like, our graveyard is a source of card advantage, so like if you have a really big graveyard, you can kind of think of that as pretty big card advantage. So we run things like Wheel of Fortune, Wheel of Misfortune as wheels. I'm even thinking of playing the Black Wheel. There's also all the looting effects. I choose to only run the two best looting effects, which are Faithless Looting and Thrill of Possibility. And I'm also running Entomb and Necropotence, which I view as card advantage. I do want to note that I really like to cast Gen, then cast Necropotence, pay like 30 life into it, basically draw 30 cards, use Gen to sack Necro before the end step trigger, so I can, instead of exiling all my hand, I can discard it, fill up my graveyard, and set up for a really explosive and powerful next turn to hopefully win. It's one of those cute little interaction things that I really like to do with my playtesting. Alright, so the next section, how are we going to do all this stuff? We need mana, mana acceleration. And since you're in Mardu, you are pretty much restricted to using mana rocks. So we got Arcane Signet, Rakdos Signet, Talisman of Conviction, Talisman of Hierarchy, Talisman of Indulgence, Chrome Mox, Lotus Petal, Mox Diamond, Mox Opal, Mana Crypt, Soul Ring. I am choosing to use a few rituals, namely Dark Ritual and Cabal Ritual. I can usually fill up my graveyard enough to where Cabal Ritual will make like 5 mana. And then I am, of course, running Dockside Extortionist because that's like the best card that was printed that year. It's busted.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, lastly, I am running 31 lands. I'm running 3 of the original dual lands, Badlands, Plateau, and Scrubland. 3 Shocklands, Blood Crypt, Godless Shrine, Sacred Foundry. I am running all the fetch lands that I can, including Arid Mesa, Bloodstained Mire, Flooded Strand, Marsh Flats, Polluted Delta, Scalding Tarn, Verdant Catacombs, Windswept Heath, and Wooded Foothills. I'm running the 3 Battle Bond lands, being Luxury Suite, Spectator Seating, Vault of Champions. I am running two swamps and two plains.
No mountains?
So, that's a good question. I'm not running any mountains because we have Blood Moon. And, because when you have Blood Moon in play, you do want at least like one swamp and one plains in order to activate again. But that's really it. So, like, you don't really need to put any basic mountains into the deck. Your Blood Moon will basically make them mountains. Some other land you have mountains. So I don't really care.
And you don't think Blood Moon is a big enough hindrance on this mana base? Because it hits most of it?
Don't get me wrong. Like, there's times where you're going to be playing against, like, monocolor decks. And, like, you have Blood Moon. And you're like, oh, this isn't actually going to help me as well as it's going to help this other player. But I think they're the kind of decks that this deck is going to be playing against. Blood Moon will be good in the against those kinds of decks, generally speaking. So I think it's worth including. It's up to you. I think it's a powerful enough effect that I'm going to run Blood Moon.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I do have six utility lands, those being Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth to kind of color fix to make sure I get enough black mana. Serra's Sanctum, because we are running enough enchantments to make it tap for at least like two or three mana, which is kind of nice. The game usually doesn't go on long enough to where it's one of those decks that taps for like nine mana. Having it tap for like two or three is good enough. Like whenever you have a land that can like repeatedly tap for like more than one colored mana, it's generally pretty good. So on that note, I'm also running like Phyrexian Tower, which can like sacrifice a creature. And some of my enchantments are enchantment creatures, so it kind of can help fill up the graveyard because you do need that enchantment in the grave and on the field in order to activate again, so sometimes that gets me out of some tricky situations. I'm also running Gemstone Caverns to kind of get out fast cards, and I'm also running Cavern of Souls and Viseju, who shelters all as a way of kind of dealing with counterspells because I don't want to bother running instant speed interaction. I'm just going to make my stuff uncounterable. I'm lazy.
Does it only besiege you make your sorceries an instance uncounterable?
Yep, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, and Cavern of Souls, I usually name, I think it's human, so it makes Gen uncounterable, and it also makes a few of my creatures in the 99 uncounterable. And so that kind of just gives a way of protecting them, making sure the combo goes through. So, cool interactions of this deck. I really do like Greater Oromancy in this deck. Greater Oromancy is one and a white enchantment. Other enchantments you control have Shroud. Enchanted creatures you control have Shroud. So, you gotta look at the wording of these cards. Shroud means you cannot target and your opponent cannot target. So, it really makes your enchantments immune to most forms of spot removal. It makes sure that your enchantments really stay on the board, that they don't get removed. The typical problem with Greater Oromancy is that you can't target your own enchantments. So, like, you can't put more than one aura on your creatures, you can't target your own enchantments and do some cool things. But the nice thing about Gen is that his ability says sacrifice an enchantment. It doesn't say target an enchantment and then sacrifice it. So you can sacrifice your enchantment on the field, getting around Greater Oromancy, and then reanimate the enchantment from your grave onto the battlefield. And Greater Oromancy also allows for your combos to be protected, because again, you've got combos like Kiki Jiki and Splinter Twin. Like if you put Splinter Twin on Kiki Jiki, now that Kiki Jiki has Shroud and can't be removed, and it's just one way in which your opponents cannot stop your combo. Same with World Gorger Dragon and certain enchantments that become auras onto it. It now makes it immune to certain interactions, and it just kind of protects a lot of your combo pieces. So it's, in this specific deck, I really like it.
Yes, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it can be a little bit confusing. It's a little bit weird. Another interaction that I really like is Underworld Breach and Aura of Silence, because on their own, they're really strong effects, but they can sacrifice themselves. So it's a really easy way, if you don't have like a looting effect or a wheel effect in hand. There are times when I've been playtesting this, and I just like play Underworld Breach, turn two, do nothing with it, let it sacrifice itself, go to the grave, and that way when I play Gen next turn, like, Gen is going to be alive because I have an enchantment in the graveyard. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it's... I mean, it feels a little bit weird, like, using Underworld Breach and then, like, not doing a splashy way to win, but it's like, hey, it's... at the very least, it's filling up my graveyard.
I definitely try and do the same things where I use some combo pieces in decks of mine, where I know then I have access to them later with cards like Underworld Breach. So I may just try and do a big ritual, even though I'm not going to get the most benefit out of it, but I just know that it'll be sitting there later for when I really need it.
Yeah. So at this point, we're wrapping up here. Like, you may be asking yourself, like, okay, Blake, why Gen, though? Why do you have Gen as your commander? Why not some other Mardu commander? And that's for a multitude of reasons. Gen synergizes strongly with your enchantment combo pieces, like Animate Dead, Dance of the Dead, Necromancy, Purphoros, Impact Tremors, Splinter Twin, Heliod, a whole bunch of your combo pieces. And then Gen also allows you to sacrifice almost all of your Rule of Law effects at times when it's most advantageous to you and most disadvantageous of your opponents, because you can just, like, play a bunch of spells, put down Rule of Law, make it so all of your opponents can only cast one spell, and then use Gen to be like, okay, now I'm going to get rid of this Rule of Law so I can cast a whole bunch of spells. And then it's just like, oh, like, you're just kind of launch yourself ahead of in terms of advantage that way. And of course, Gen, as I've said earlier, can get back enchantments that have maybe been destroyed or countered earlier on in the game. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I know some people are going to ask, like, is this a CDH deck? And the answer is no. Not at all. This deck, from a CDH perspective, is just way too fucking slow. It lacks enough disruption early on. It lacks enough instant speed interaction to keep up with other decks. Like, the CDH meta is pretty fast, and Gen is, like, not even close to being fast enough. I think when I goldfish this deck, I typically combo out and win, like turn 5 or 6, and, like, that's typically too slow for a combo deck in CDH meta. This is very much like a Glass Cannon deck, too.
I know a downside of Glass Cannon is that if they don't get the combo to go off, it's like they shoot their shot and they miss. So yeah, they tend to just fall apart and not be able to recover quickly afterwards. How does Gen solve that issue if it's meant to be Glass Cannon?
Well, the nice thing is, like, if someone stops you from winning, it usually means they've, like, destroyed your stuff. So it's just back in the graveyard. So just put out another enchantment and try and use Gen to, like, combo again next turn. And you just kind of do that over and over and over again. And until you hopefully win.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So that is my analysis of Gen. I honestly probably could have talked about this commander for 3 or 4 hours, but I tried really hard to, like, synthesize my thoughts and be as clear as possible, believe it or not. And yeah, that's how I plan to build Gen. It might take me a few months to get the rest of the cards for this deck. I also really am looking forward to playing with people in person one day. And if any of you have any suggestions, yeah, if any of you have any suggestions on what cards you think should go in Gen, or if you're interested in building Scamander, how are you going to build it? I would really like to know. I really do love enchantments. I really do just love talking about it.
All right. We are the Wizard Staff. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Make sure you leave a like and review. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at WizardStaff101. You can send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a great night. Peace.
Peace.